Thanks for keeping it on your freeform station. We hope you're enjoying the music. 91.5 WMFO Medford and worldwide at WMFO.org.
WMFO Medford. Good afternoon, everyone. Well, once again, they didn't allow my card access to the station, and it's very annoying, but I'm here. Luckily, I got one of the custodial gals to graciously let me in. So, program director said this was dealt with, but I guess not. Anyway, this is the Voicemobile, and I'm your host, Joyce the Voice. So after a very long hiatus after a hip surgery, I was on 2 weeks ago for the first time in all those months, and it was a little bit rocky because they had changed some of the things around. But I see the board is actually set up the way it ought to be, which is great. And then last week, I had this crazy eye infection. Ugh. If any of you have a dry eye and you have to take drops, which I do, sometimes you get, I think it's called blepharitis or blepharitis, something like that. Anyway, it's obnoxious. And you get all kinds of stuff covering your eyes and draining out, and I couldn't drive. It was like ridiculous. So luckily that's done, and here we are. So I have some wonderful new music, all kinds of different things to share with you, and I'm gonna start off if I can find it. So this is a wonderful artist, a pianist named Simone Dinnerstein. Now, there's a Dinnerstein that my mother was friendly with in my hometown. It turns out she doesn't believe that they're related, but she's out of New York. And actually, this CD was recorded here in Massachusetts at Mechanics Hall in Worcester. Anyway, it's quite gorgeous. This is Circles, Piano Concertos by Bach and Glass. And there's a wonderful comment by Philip Glass regarding the second one. All right, maybe I will play that. It's a rather, there are three movements. Let's see if I can get, oh, there's only two disc players now, not three. Interesting. All right, so we'll see if this actually works. Lovely. So this was recorded in 2017. Philip Glass is the composer. And I want to go to number four. And this is movement number one here on the Voicemobile at WMFO Medford. Well, that's interesting. Huh. It isn't automatically queuing. Well, why is that? No, they have changed things. All right, let's go like this. Okay. Thank you. So before I go into the second movement, I want to just say that the observance of Shavuos, or Shavuot, is fast approaching. We have been in a period since Passover. That is, those of us in the Jewish community who observe the cycle of Jewish holidays. And so from Passover up until 49 days, we've been working on ourselves, working on our qualities, midot, so that we could get out of a slave mentality, so that we could be prepared to stand at Mount Sinai, at Har Sinai, to receive the Torah, the law, because the whole point of us being let out, released from bondage, was so that we could stand there at Sinai, and as a whole nation, 600,000 plus, actually received the law from God. And so those of us who count the Omer, which is what we're commanded to do, an Omer is a grain. It's just a simple thing that we were asked to do, so that we're connecting from the second night of Passover, the second Seder, until 49 days, and then that night is the observance of Shavuot. And I'm just going to look and see if I have with me here, yes, Around the Year with the National Jewish Outreach Program. It's by Shimon Apisdorf. And let's see what he has to say about Shavuos. Okay. Shavuos is the holiday, isn't it? Well, yes, it is. It's the holiday that celebrates the giving of the Torah to the Jewish people at Mount Sinai. In parentheses, this is quite cute. You know, God, Charlton Heston, the Ten Commandments, the whole bit. This is obviously meant for college students. It's an outreach program, so perfect for broadcasting from Tufts University. The Jews, a quick history, actually a quirk of history, huh? As a rule, distinct nationalities are bound together by a common history, a common language, and a common homeland. Not so the Jewish people. Though there was a time, some 2,500 years ago, when all Jews not only studied and prayed in Hebrew, but also haggled in the marketplace, told jokes, and screamed at their children in Hebrew. This ceased to be the case when the Jewish nation was exiled from its homeland and took up residence in places like Fez, Minsk, Constantinople, Paris, Gibraltar, Sydney, Montreal, and Cincinnati. It can be said that for the last 2,000 years, we Jews have spoken more languages, imagine that, than any other people that ever existed. About the only language we Jews didn't speak was our own Hebrew. The same can be said for a sense of shared history. The Jews of today who live in Minsk, Morocco, and Montana have to go back thousands of years until they come to a place and time where their histories converge. And let's be honest, how many Jews know about much of their family's histories of even 50 years ago, let alone the universally shared Jewish history of 2,500 years ago? Finally, let us reflect for a moment on our common homeland. Again, it's been well over 2,000 years since the Jewish people shared a common national residence. Even today, with the rebirth of Israel, most Jews are still more at home on Long Island or in the suburbs of London, Mexico City, or Vancouver than they are in Ramat Gan or Kiryat Shemona. Today, the Jewish people are a hodgepodge of histories, languages, nationalities, and cultures. It is difficult to fit Jewish history into any general taxonomy of national and religious development because it is a unique phenomenon. Indeed, the historian of the Jews is constantly faced with the problem of categorizing a process of which there is no other example anywhere. This is a quote from Paul Johnson, A History of the Jews. That Jewish thing. Despite the fact that so many Jews have seemingly so little in common, there exists a curious phenomenon that almost every Jew I have ever met has experienced. It's quote that Jewish thing. It's that thing that binds Ethiopian Jews to Park Avenue Jews, despite the fact that they don't share the same language or culture and would be hard-pressed to make heads or tails out of one another's religion. And if you think they don't have much in common, try introducing either of them to a Jew from the Jerusalem neighborhood of Meir Shearim. So the obvious question must be asked, if we seem to have so little in common, why is it that we have so much in common? Okay, if we are truly brothers and sisters, despite sharing so little of what binds and defines other nationalities, what is it that nourishes our sense of collective identity, of peoplehood, of being a part of a larger family? It, that is the Torah, gave to the Jews, through the 2,000 years of wandering, which they were soon to begin, a portable fatherland, as Heine worked to call it, an intangible and spiritual state. It kept them united despite every dispersion, proud despite every defeat, and brought them, across the centuries, to our own time. A strong and apparently indestructible people. It's a quote from Will Durant, The Story of Civilization. And now we come to Shavuot for the clueless but curious. If an anthropologist studying the Jewish people was asked to speculate about what would be Judaism's most revered, enduring, and observed holiday, it would be quite reasonable for her to respond, why Shavuot, of course. After all, that is the seminal holiday, the one that is the source for all things Jewish. In reality, just the opposite is the case. Time and time again, demographic studies show that Shavuot ranks at the bottom of the list of Jewish practices. My own anecdotal surveys repeatedly show that most Jews have no idea what Shavuot is about or when and how it is celebrated. The next few pages are a brief overview of the basics of Shavuot. Our overview will begin with the roots of Shavuot in the Torah, with when and how it is celebrated, and what practices are central to its celebration. From there, we will take a closer look at some hidden spiritual gems in the lost holiday of Shavuot. Let's begin. So we'll do a little bit. Perhaps one reason why Shavuot has fallen by the wayside of Jewish life is because nobody seems to even know what to call the holiday. The Torah itself ascribes three different names to this holiday. In one place, it is referred to as the Festival of Shavuot. The word Shavuot literally means weeks. In another place, the Torah calls the holiday the Festival of Katsir. The word Katsir literally means gathering or harvest. And in a third place, it is called the Day of First Fruits. The Talmud. The sages in the Talmud, when discussing Shavuot, or whatever its name is, seem to ignore the Torah altogether and give it a whole new name. In the Talmud, Shavuot is known as Atzeret. In Hebrew, the Hebrew word Atzeret means to restrain or to hold back. The prayer book. Finally, when one comes to the synagogue for Shavuot prayer services, we find that the prayer book chooses the name Festival of Shavuot to identify the holiday. At the same time, the prayer book modifies the name by attaching the appellation, the day of the giving of the Torah. So there you have it. The holiday, the name of the holiday is, drum roll please, the Festival of Weeks, gathering, restraining, first fruits, giving of the Torah, in other words, Shavuot, exclamation point. Now that we know something about the name of the holiday, let us take a look at the date upon which it is celebrated. Well, I'm going to stop right here for now. We'll continue on in a bit. We're going to go now to the second movement of this wonderful recording of Shimoni Dinnerstein, A Far Cry, Circles, Piano Concertos by Bach and Glass. Thank you. So that was the second movement of Circles Piano Concerto No. 3 movements by Philip Glass, performed by Shimoni Dinnerstein, who I heard at a church over in Brookline. I can't tell you the name of the church. It's an old church. Of course, that could be anything. But the concert was just glorious. And I didn't bring the program with me. I'll have to bring that next time if I remember. So before I continue on with explanation about Shavuos, I want to share with you some things that have been happening. I don't want the camera. Let's see. So some of you may or may not be aware that about 2 weeks ago there was a terrible fire in Israel, and it completely destroyed the moshav, the community that my Rebbe, Rabbi Shlomo Kalbach, had created. So he founded this small town in 1975, and it was home to a large English-speaking community. So about 60 homes, almost everything was leveled. It was terrible. And I read today that I wasn't sure if it was by the dryness of everything around it, but I believe it was set. It was arson. Some of the terrorists set the fire. And not only was that community destroyed, but there were hundreds of fires, including Kibbutz Harel near Beit Shemesh, where at least 6 homes were damaged by fire. And the pictures are horrific. In addition, people were evacuated from the central towns of Gimzo, Tarum, Neot Kedumim. Neot Kedumim has a biblical garden there. Gee, I hope that wasn't destroyed. Kfar Daniel, Kfar Uriah, and Carmia. It says forces were preparing to possibly evacuate thousands of more Israelis, including ones in the central towns of Shilat, Kfar Ruth, and Lapid. It's just really, it's terrible. These people lost everything. So there are a number of websites set up to try and help recoup the losses. I didn't see it in this link. I have to see if there's one. Let's see. I'm on my cell phone. It's not as easy to scroll down through here and find. Let's see if there's something. Here, click here. There's a GoFundMe.com. Let's see. So, organized by Hanita. Let's see what they say. GoFundMe. So, we're building for Hanita and El Natan Golem. So, that's one. So, these people are out of Eugene, Oregon. Says Achanita Golem here, someone started a fire in 4 locations surrounding our village, Moshav Mivo Modim in Israel, as a terrorist act. Our house burned down completely along with my business and our entire community. We had 5 minutes to grab our 3 children, Meya, Shalev, and Aniel, and run for our lives. We lost everything. And it goes on. So you can certainly donate by going to the GoFundMe, Rebuilding for Hanita and El Natan Golem. And I believe if there, there's Christians and Jews United also have a fund page. I'm just going to see if I can find. Maybe this is the same one. Okay, so this is the same one I was on before. All right, well, if you want to help, if you go and put in Modi'in, I think you'll probably find a link. I apologize, I don't have that. I really wanted to share that with you. So it's just a terrible thing to destroy like that. I don't know when this will all stop. Nothing seems to be working. All right, so back to explanation of the holiday. It says Shavuot is in the summer, isn't it? The Hebrew date. Shavuot is celebrated on the sixth day of the Hebrew month of Sivan, the date on which the Torah was given. On the English calendar, you will usually find that Shavuot is celebrated somewhere between mid-May and early June. Now, my Hebrew birthday is the 11th of Sivan, so it falls right after Shavuos, whereas my English birthday already was. That was May 23rd. So usually I celebrate the whole time. So, and thanks to this wonderful lady who let me into the station. What's your name? Maria. Maria. Thank you so much. She really rescued me. Okay. Shavuot means weeks. In addition to Shavuot being celebrated on the 6th of Sivan, it is also celebrated precisely 7 weeks after Passover. These 7 weeks between Passover and Shavuot are not just seven ordinary weeks. This seven-week period time period is known as Sefirat HaOmer. During the 7 weeks of Sefirat HaOmer, there is a mitzvah, a religious commandment, to count the 49 days of the 7 weeks as we travel from the holiday of Passover to that of Shavuot. This begins to explain why the holiday is called Shavuot, or weeks. Not only does Shavuot take place on the 6th of Sivan, the day on which the Torah was given, but also it marks the completion of the special 7 weeks of counting. Aha. So, I want to talk a little bit about the counting, because these 7 weeks each have a different characteristics. That isn't what we're supposed to work on for that week. And then each day has a special characteristic. So there are 49 permutations of these different qualities of working on ourselves. The first week being chesed, or loving kindness, or expansion. The second week being gevura, or boundaries. The third week being the balance between those two, which is called teferet, or beauty. And then the fourth week is Netzach, which is victory, and the sixth week is fifth week is Hod, which is symbolized by Aharon the harp priest, and the seventh week is Yisod, which is intimacy. And the last of the 7 weeks is Malchut, or kingdom, or the sort of physical embodiment of all of these. And these midot are not exclusive, but it's just which one is leading the parade, essentially. And so I learned from studying a book called the Ari gives colors that are identified with the midot, or these characteristics. So I decided, when I learned about that, how can I embody what these midot are? And so I thought, well, there's colors. How can I do that? So I decided to wear the colors of the different weeks and of the days of the week and these permutations. And I've been doing this for almost 25 years now, ever since I learned about it. So it's been very interesting. Now today, we're in the week Malchut, it's the last week, and the day of the week is Netzach. So Netzach is light pink, and Malchut is blue. So it's light pink within blue. And it's really quite fun. A lot of my friends have started to realize, they said, oh, what color is it? We know what what characteristic we're to work on. And so it's a lot of fun. So I think, I hope you're enjoying this, but I'm going to play the last movement number 3 of this incredible Circles Piano Concerto. And this is the first two. One was Allegro, the second one was Andante, and the third one is Allegro Assai. And we'll get that